Rediscover God's Word, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. This is Real Bible Study with teacher Tom Bradford. Welcome to Torah Class.
Okay, so we ended up our previous lesson discussing the matter of Joel chapter 4, where Tyre and Sidon are places God was going to pour out his wrath upon, and how that they were part of Phoenicia, which is modern-day Lebanon. Now, sometimes the biblical names of places can be confusing, so it helps to untangle it a little bit so that we can better picture in our minds where it was then, where it is now. Even the great Greek author Homer called the Phoenicians Sidonians, because Sidon was the most important city in the area of Phoenicia. So regions and nations typically referred to by various names, even during the same era. Now, modern-day Gaza, which is so much in the news in our time, was in Bible times, but one of the five main city-states that together formed Philistia. This is the Philistia that is spoken of in Joel 4:4. You know, it's fascinating to me that Gaza has retained that same name for the same place for at least 3,000 years. I don't think we should overlook the spiritual, if not the geopolitical significance of that all throughout ancient times, Philistia was an enemy of Israel. And it has reemerged as Israel's enemy today. This is not a historical accident. Okay? God's intended it to be so. I think in order that those with eyes and ears can see that historical relationships of enmity between two peoples are still here and they're not going to end. The Palestinians of Gaza are the modern day Philistines. In fact, Palestine is but the Greek word for Hebrew Plishtim, which when translated to English is Philistine. Even though clearly the modern world is oblivious to this amazing fact, as is the Christian church in general. So let's reread Joel chapter 4, but let's start at verse 5. Open your Bibles to Joel chapter 4. We will start at verse 5. You took my silver and gold. You brought my good treasures into your temples. The people of Judah and Jerusalem you sold to the Greeks so that you could remove them far away from their land. I will rouse them from the place where you sold them and pay you back right on your own head. I will sell your sons and daughters to the people of Judah, and they will sell them to the men of Sheba, a nation far off, for Adonai has spoken. Proclaim this among the nations. Prepare for war. Rouse the warriors. Let all the fighting men approach and attack. Hammer your plow blades into swords and your pruning knives into spears. Let the weak say, I'm strong. Hurry, come up, you surrounding nations. Gather yourselves together. Bring your warriors down, Adonai. Let the nations be roused and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat. For there I will sit to judge all the surrounding nations. Swing the sickle. For the harvest is ripe. Come, tread, for the winepress is full. The vats are overflowing, for their wickedness is great. Such enormous crowds in the Valley of Decision. For the day of Adonai is upon us in the Valley of Decision. The sun and the moon have grown black. The stars have stopped shining. Adonai will roar from Zion. He'll thunder from Yerushalayim. The sky and the earth will shake. But Adonai will be a refuge for his people, a stronghold for the people of Israel. You will know that I am Adonai, your God, living on Zion in my holy mountain. Then Jerusalem will be holy. Foreigners will pass through her no more. Then when that time comes, the mountains will drip with sweet wine. The hills will flow with milk. All the stream beds of Judah will run with water. A spring will flow from the house of Adonai to water the Shittim Valley. But Egypt will be desolate, Edom a desert waste, because of the violence done to the people of Judah, because they shed innocent blood in their land. Judah will be inhabited forever, Jerusalem throughout all generations. I will cleanse them of blood guilt, which I have not yet cleansed, for Adonai is living in Zion. In verse 5, Jehovah is specifically accusing and calling out Phoenicia, which is here called Tyre and Sidon, and Philistia, of which Gaza was their main city, of accusing them of taking gold and silver from Judah and Jerusalem, using it in their temples to their gods. Now, at all times, we must keep in mind that while on earth, the Holy Land, Israel, might seem to be but another political nation with a typical human government, to God, this is not the case. Jehovah, while giving over possession of the rest of the earth to many different people and nations, has carved out a place that he calls his own particular property, to be used only by his particular set-apart people. And even his own people are not to think of their occupation of this land in terms of them owning it. Rather, they are to see themselves as but privileged land tenants living on property that God owns and is most jealous to keep. Thus, whatever possession of his people, their produce or minerals or any natural resources that are wrongly taken from his property is an offense directly towards him that will, in time and in a manner of his choosing, be severely punished. This is what both ancient and modern Phoenicia, Lebanon, and Philistia, Gaza, are to expect. And when we see today what's happening between those places in Israel, well, it's, for me, astounding to realize how prophetic it is. And so what we're reading about in Joel is happening right before our eyes. What does this tell us? It tells us we're in the end times. And we need to earnestly prepare for catastrophe after catastrophe. We will not go unscathed, even though most Americans are blindly confident that we are sufficiently insulated to avoid severe damage. Now, verse 6 speaks of Phoenicia and Philistia, Gaza, kidnapping residents of Judah, then selling them to Greek nations. In reality, the Hebrew word used is Javan, not Greece, not Greek. So we must understand this term in the way that Joel and his hearers and readers would have understood it in the 8th century BC. Like we see often, and we must often do, we must wipe our brain's memory banks clean about what we've been taught from a biblical standpoint about Greece and Greeks. Javan is the name of one of Japheth's 7 sons. Japheth was a son of Noah, and he is listed in the so-called Table of Nations in Genesis chapter 10. So as such, Javan was the forefather of the prophet Elisha and of Tarshish, and the people called the Hittites, and also the Dodanim, also known in First Chronicles as the Rodanim. These are exactly the same people. It's just that there is some confusion in the Hebrew Bible about the spelling of their name, because the letters Resh and Dalet look so much alike that they are regularly accidentally miscopied when the scriptures were hand-copied in ancient times. Well, the Dodanim, or the Rodanim, occupied that area that was later called Macedonia and Greece. In Joel's time, the term Javan was used much the same way the term Tarshish came to be used in later Bible times. That is, it was used the same way Westerners might say that something is as far away as Timbuktu. Now, Timbuktu, while on the one hand is an actual place in Africa, it is, on the other hand, used mostly as an expression, just to indicate some place, any place in general, that's very, very far away. So when Joel used the term Javan, it simply meant a very distant place. Not at all that it was Greece. Not at all where there were Greek speakers. Now, some modern Bible scholars use this verse as evidence that Joel was written no later than the 4th century BC, after there came to be a nation of Greece. And the Greek language became prolific, and probably after Alexander the Great conquered so much of the Middle East. I assure you this is not the case. To be clear, Javan did not mean either Greek-speaking places or Greece itself. It's just an expression of people who live far, far away. And since the Philistines and the Phoenicians were seafaring people who lived on the Mediterranean coast, they were big in the slave trade business that sent and sold captured people, including Judeans, including those who lived in Jerusalem, to other cultures of the distant nations of the known world. Now, while slavery and the slave trade were simply a normal part of various countries' economies of that time, God was totally against it, and he labeled it in the law as a great sin. It was especially an offense against him when it was his people that were captured and used as slaves. Now I must pause for a moment and speak of what's happening as I pen this lesson in October of 2023. Israel has been brazenly attacked yet again by Gaza, Philistia, and atrocities were committed against them that go beyond barbarian. They're just monstrous. They're inhuman. Over 1,300 Israeli civilians were murdered in cold blood. More than 200 Israelis kidnapped, taken to Gaza. Old and young men, women and children, babies and grandmothers in wheelchairs were taken. They are being held to be sold to ransom, or to be used as human shields against a reprisal by Israel. And while we cannot label these captured victims as slaves, it amounts to exactly the same thing. Kidnapping. Here's what God's law says is to happen to kidnappers. Exodus 21, verse 16. Whoever kidnaps someone must be put to death, regardless of whether he has already sold him, or even if the person is found still in his possession. God, through Israel, is, as I write, in process of carrying out actions against Gaza that no doubt are going to have this result, and it should. So as believers and worshipers of the God of Israel, we ought not be surprised, nor should we be against what Israel's doing. The curse of the law upon those who kidnap is being exacted. It is justice in God's eyes. And although Israel's mostly secular, it has always been so that people at times unknowingly carry out what they believe is their own will. but it actually is God's will. And that's what's happening right now. Now, the idea of Phoenicia and Philistia removing people of Judah and Jerusalem and selling them to people far from their land, as verse 6 explains, is to keep them from accessing their God, Yahweh. See, in faraway lands, it was believed that these Israelites would have no means to access Yahweh, nor could they sacrifice and atone for their sins, or ever could they be in a ritually clean state. Thus, the thought is less of exile as a corporate nation, more on individuals being kidnapped and sent away. Nonetheless, the blossoming concept here is of the Philistines and the Phoenicians suffering the same as what they did to Israel, being forced out of what they consider their homeland, never to be returned again. Now, we can probably expect such a thing to happen to the modern-day Philistines, the Gazans, and this latest conflict between Israel and Gaza for their kidnapping of Israelis. In Deuteronomy, we read this in Deuteronomy 30, verses 2 and 3. And you, Israel, will return to Adonai your God and pay attention to what he has said, which will be exactly what I'm ordering you to do today, you and your children, with all your heart and all your being. And at that point, Adonai, your God, will reverse your exile, and he'll show you mercy. He will return and gather you from all the peoples to which Adonai, your God, scattered you. However, as Moses will say a couple of verses later, the opposite will happen to those enemies that kidnap individuals or haul off the Israelites en masse to foreign nations. Listen to Deuteronomy 30. 7 through 8, Adonai your God will put all these curses on your enemies, on those who hated and persecuted you, but you will return and pay attention to what Adonai says and obey all his commandments, which I'm giving you today. So just as we read in Joel, Israel's and the nation's fates